Hi, and once again, welcome to Practically Speaking. My name is Lane Jones, and I want to thank you for joining us for this informal discussion with the management team of North Point Ministries. Today's segment continues a series on the seven practices of effective ministry that form the basic operating system for how we do ministry. Today we're going to discuss practice number three, narrow the focus. As always, I'm joined by Andy Stanley. Andy, anyone who's been around North Point very long knows that you feel very strongly about the idea of focus.
Yeah, focus is extraordinarily important for any organization or any individual, and we'll talk about that later, I think. But essentially, everything naturally drifts towards complexity, whether it's my schedule, the busyness of my family, what's going on in the ministry. And I think anybody who's been a pastor for very long, either they've inherited a somewhat complex system or they started a church or an organization and it was so simple, you knew everybody, there were two or three environments, and as time goes on, everything drifts toward complexity. You never have to be intentional about creating complexity. It just happens. So in order to combat that, you have to be committed to narrowing the focus.
Also joining us today is Reggie Joyner, Executive Director of Family Ministries for North Point Ministries. And Reggie, this growing complexity in ministry leads a lot of churches to become what I know you call ADD churches.
Yeah, that's right. I think a lot of churches get distracted from their vision and actually end up with multi-focus going in a lot of different directions. It's the difference in a river that runs in a narrow direction that has power, and all these branch-like configurations that take ministry in different directions that ultimately causes a ministry to become like a stagnant swamp. Years ago, I remember sitting in conferences where actually those who were teaching churches how to grow propagated or basically encouraged churches to take a menu ministry philosophy.
Yeah, sort of a smorgasbord approach where you have a little bit of so many things, and the idea was what we're doing is we're creating more connecting points that we can find something to attract everybody.
Absolutely. And the more entry points you have in an organization, the more people will come and the more you'll grow. But what we've learned after a couple of decades of watching that happen is a lot of those churches have become, these large, complex organizations. And to maintain that kind of ministry, they've come to a place where they've had to cut back their budget, lay off staff. And it really has created more, more problems than it has really caused solutions for growth.
And oftentimes, there's no way to really measure the benefit to complex programming because so many times you have two or three people, oftentimes people will become a part of two or three different components of a ministry. So everybody's counting everybody two or three times. And so up front, it looks like, hey, we're going to attract more people. We have more entry points. When in reality, the people you have just get extremely busy, and it's really hard to measure the value of that approach.
And it dilutes your potential to make an impact. Instead of increasing your potential to make an impact, it takes all of your energy, all of your resources, all of your staff and your budget, and it divides it in 100 different ways instead of it being focused so that it can be excellent. When people show up here sometimes, and this always happens with family ministry, we'll have children's ministers or student ministers come through, and they go, wow, your program seems so excellent. And then when we start telling them the things that we don't do, they always have the same response. Well, if we didn't have to do all those things, we could have an excellent program too.
Yeah, so basically by applying this principle, we can do fewer things and yet have a greater impact.
Absolutely. And I think if whoever's listening to this, if you're in ministry, you know automatically right now there's something that you're thinking of that if you could get rid of something, you could make that better. And we always live under this cloud of all this stuff we have to do, and we just go through our life and go through our ministries, and we just sometimes wonder, if somebody would just take this off of my plate, then I could make this over here really become something great. And that's really the principle of narrow the focus.
I think complexity makes organizations dumber. Complexity is so distracting that nothing gets done as well as it could get done were fewer things being done. And again, it's intuitive. I mean, you hear that, you don't argue against it. Everybody would agree, that's right. Simple is better, focus is better. Complex just means scattered and nothing gets my undivided attention. And yet for some reason in church life, we add and we add and we add and we chase the new fad and we chase the new program and we never subtract, and things become so incredibly complex that we just oftentimes just fold up under the pressure of all of it and we don't enjoy any of it.
I think one of the advantages of our team as we first started meeting, several years ago to start North Point, is we were reading books together. And when we read Al Reese's book, Focus, it created a great dialogue because we had grown up in traditional models that were very complex, that had multi ministries doing everything you can imagine. And I even remember, one specific afternoon, we'd been reading the book, And there was pressure being put on our ministry to do a VBS program, Vacation Bible School. And I remember sending, you know, Andy an email going, well, what do you think? Somebody wants us to do a VBS program this summer. And he sent back one word, focus. And automatically in my mind, you know, it was just permission again not to have to do everything and to do the things that we felt like we can do best.
But that brings up an interesting point, because don't you think that a lot of ministries get started around sort of a needs-based approach that, well, so-and-so needs this, or this group needs, you know, this particular ministry. And the answer, instead of focusing in on what, you know, what is the best way of meeting that, is meeting it in multiple ways.
Absolutely. I mean, I think because we're Christians, because we're believers, because we're ministers, anyone who comes along and says they have a need, we feel this responsibility or we feel this obligation to meet that need.
But Jesus never did that. I mean, you read the Gospels, Jesus did not allow the needs of the people to drive his time, his schedule, or his mission. I mean, how many times have we communicated, preached, and taught the passages of Jesus pulling away from the crowds? And he didn't pull away from the crowds when the needs were all met or when the desires were all satisfied. He pulled away from the need. He pulled away from the crowd because he knew the mission he was on, and it required that he pull away from the crowd. And again, there's those incredible stories like when he went to the pool of Bethesda and, you know, healed the guy that was there waiting for the waters to be stirred by the angel. And, you know, I always picture him tiptoeing over all the other people that were there waiting to be healed, because the Bible says, you know, people gathered there waiting for this mysterious thing to happen that we don't completely understand. And it's as if he, you know, tiptoes over all the sick people, heals the one guy and leaves. Yeah. We're like, well, what about everybody else? Well, you know, his mission in life wasn't to heal everybody. It was a means to an end. And again, I think Jesus was so extraordinarily focused. And I think as ministers and as church planners and senior pastors and church leaders, we've got to take our cue from him in that way.
And if we don't, what's at stake is huge. I mean, if we don't, we'll be busy doing ministry, but not reaching people. And ultimately, you know, down the road, we'll wake up and look back and go, you know, where did we get out of line and what happened? And sometimes it points back to this issue of focus. One of the greatest things that a leader of a staff can give a staff is the idea of focus and permission not to do anything or not to have to do everything. One of the greatest things a startup church could learn right at the beginning of the organization is that they don't need to try to create ministries for every need that's out there. That they need to decide, okay, what are the best things we can do, and let's focus our vision in our church.
Reggie, remember the brochure we got from the church? Tell them about that. That was
in those early days. Again, you know, we were trying to figure out, okay, what do we do to start a church? And this brochure came in the mail from a friend of ours who was starting a church in another city, in another state. And he had basically gone through and canvassed the neighborhoods in that area and found out every need. Basically, he asked the question, what do you want in a church?
I mean, it was like every hobby. Oh, it was amazing.
And he had basically committed that they were going to create a support group, a small group, a study group. You know,
an equestrian center.
An equestrian center for every kind of – because they wanted
sports, everything.
They wanted to be a one-stop shop for everybody. And interestingly enough – you know, recently I ran into some of the staff that are working in that church, and the one thing they said, this was just amazing, the one thing they said over and over again is, we just wish we could find focus. We just wish we could find focus. And this is 10 years later. But we looked at that, and there was a temptation when we first saw it to think, well, maybe we're not doing enough.
I remember being intimidated, thinking, good grief, we're trying to have a couple of worship services. And this church started the same time we did. It was a nationally known speaker and communicator, and I looked at this brochure and thought, man, we're nothing. You know, we're never going to get anything done. I mean, this guy's got huge vision. And but again, looking back, as we've looked at that organization and others, they just evolve into such incredible complexity where there is competition for resources, competition for rooms, competition within the organization. And I know we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but I'm jumping ahead. And ultimately, what gets squeezed out is not ministry to believers, but evangelism. Complexity kills the spirit of evangelism in a church, because unbelievers and unchurched people never clamor for our attention, ever.
Right.
It's always the believers that are saying, but what about a group for this? And my kid needs that. And when are we going to start one of these? So eventually, all the resources are consumed trying to keep insiders happy. Meanwhile, the outsiders just go to the lake.
Right. And this brings up a great distinction we need to make. In our last segment of Practically Speaking, we talked about thinking steps, not programs, having a strategic approach to the ministries that we begin. And Reggie, this is similar, but there is a distinct difference. Talk about the difference in think steps and narrow the focus.
Well, absolutely. Think steps, you know, not programs, is a strategy that helps you understand where you need to take someone. Ultimately, we've designed at the end of our program, we want people to be in a small group, and we've backed up from there, and we've said, okay, so every program program we create should lead them to there. Anything else that doesn't lead them to small group or lead them to that end, we don't want to do. Narrow the focus is simply about doing less. Narrow the focus is simply about reducing what you do so that what you do can be done with excellence.
Right. So if it takes one step to get them there, don't provide multiple steps to get them.
Absolutely.
Right. The goal isn't to create as many entry points into church life. It's to create the strategic ones and then move people toward those entry points. And as we've seen, it works.
Okay, guys. So then practically speaking, how do we narrow the focus?
First of all, you have to make an intentional decision to choose what works best over what is presently working. For those of you who are starting up a church, that means you've got to make some hard calls, have some difficult discussions about what you think is going to work best. It's really, in some ways, going to be easier for you because you have a blank piece of paper. You can make some choices at the beginning. For those of you who are already in the midst of ministry and you've been in existence for several years, because we do drift toward complexity, you may have to make some hard decisions about killing some things, getting rid of some things so that some other things can work better. For example, how many times do we sit and meet with staff members of other churches and they say, oh, we're trying to do small groups, we're trying to do Sunday school too, and we just feel like that, you know, both can exist.
Yeah, and rarely have we seen that work. And generally it's a fear of losing people that causes them to hang on to Sunday school. Any church that's trying to start small groups, somebody's admitting small groups is the future. Sunday school is not accomplishing what we want to see accomplished. But instead of simplifying, they make it more complex. Again, competing for resources, competing for rooms, competing for dollars, and adding instead of subtracting in an attempt to kind of transition. But essentially, as every expert will tell you, if you're going to make change, big change is easier than small change. In small change, you don't see the benefit of the change. You only feel the pain. Big change, you're more likely to see the benefit immediately. So again, in an effort to not have as much pain, you have more pain, more complexity, and you don't get the best of either world.
Most of the time when churches show up and they say, well, we've tried this, but it isn't working, it's because they added it and they didn't take something away. And because they didn't take something away and they just added it, they still had the pressure of the thing that was old existing, pulling, you know, attention and resources away from the thing they were trying to make flourish. You know, in the New Testament, when Jesus talked about the vine and the branches, I mean, the whole illustration that he talks about, you know, cut off whatever isn't bearing fruit, that's easy for us. Any of us can kill something that's dead. But he also talks about pruning back what is living. You see, that's where the real pressure comes. The real pressure comes in our ministry when we look into our ministry and we go, well, this is working, but we really want this to work, so let's kill what is working so what needs to work can work better.
And that takes really good leadership, because that's not an easy thing to do. And you do get emails and phone calls, but ultimately, you know, you're better off because it's simpler.
Yeah, and we end up creating a really kind of special list, don't we, Reggie?
Yeah, we do. We have a not-to-do list, and I think it would just be practical, you know, for your staff to sit down around a table and go, okay, what are the things that we really need to work? What are the things that are working, that are getting in the way? Let's make a not-to-do list, and let's get rid of the things that are getting in the way.
And for guys who are just starting out, like you said, it's so much easier. You just decide right up front, there are just some things we're not going to do.
There are so many things that we don't do. I mean, the typical church does. You know, we could rattle off a list right now.
Sometimes it's a matter of saying, this is something we're not going to do now.
Right.
And we made a lot of those decisions up front as well. We're not saying we'll never do this. We're saying right now. A great example of that would be Stone Creek Church, which is a few miles from here. And Tommy Politz is senior pastor and the church planter there. And years ago, we were talking about just church planning and issues. He said, you know, singles come to me and say, well, what are we doing for the singles? What are we doing for the singles? And Tommy was smart. He said, we're not doing anything. Because he was smart enough to know at that stage in the life of their church to try to add singles ministry to everything else they were doing with the limited resources that every church plant has would have been suicide. But he had the guts to look at these folks and say, you know what? Go to North Point. They have strong singles ministry. We don't have singles ministry right now. So he didn't make a forever commitment, but he made a strategic decision that for right now, in light of where we are in the life cycle of our church, it would be foolish to make things more complex and take resources away from something we've just begun. So it's those kinds of decisions that really mark great leadership. And it's the only way to keep things from becoming complex.
And we explain to leaders all the time, you know, we don't do women's ministry, don't do men's ministry, we don't do athletic programs, we don't do midweek services. And we start going down the list of things. We don't do vacation Bible school.
We don't have a prayer ministry. We don't train anybody in evangelism. We don't have discipleship ministry. We don't have – it's amazing.
All of a sudden, you know, the things that we do take on an entirely different meaning and focus. And a lot of those issues that we just talked about are driven through the programs that we created so that can happen most effectively. And again, as churches come in and they look at what we don't do, it frees them up. And that's our one message. If we could just get churches to understand, you don't have to do everything. You do the most important things. And as we think through all the things that we don't do, what we've discovered is a lot of churches over time have created programming, and a staff member or a volunteer's identity gets built around that program. They find their significance in
or their job description.
Absolutely. And what we've discovered is it's hard for them to let that go. It's hard for them to do away with that. And for the sake of the organization as a whole, if that mentality seeps into your organization, you will end up, again, becoming very complex with multiple staff, with multiple menus of programs that basically dilute your power.
We've got a staff member that came from a different church, Emily Hill, and she's a great example of this.
Yeah, Emily basically was in a church in Texas, and she wanted to do a kids' stuff program for families, and they had adult Sunday school model and needed to go to small group model, and so they flew in staff here, they flew in volunteers or influential people to see this model, and they went back, and they actually did away with adult Sunday school. They created a different kind of concept for children, and in the first year, about 30-40% of the people left. And into the second year, that number of people had come back, and they started growing at a rate they'd never grown before. They were willing to take a risk and willing to cut back and start doing a few things better, and as a result, they begin to grow. You can't immediately judge your success by what you see happen during the first 6 months, even the first year sometimes. You need to understand that you're preserving the future of an organization if you make hard decisions, and ultimately you're setting yourself up for growth if you get rid of the things that are in the way of what is working.
I think there's a lot of fear involved in these kinds of decisions, both in, as a church planner, what if we don't start this? What if we don't have this? There's the fear of what will people think. I think for me, in some cases, there was the fear of what will God think, because it was so easy for me to associate God's blessing with a certain kind of programming. And it sounds funny for me to say, but I think emotionally, because of the structure and the context I grew up in and what I saw God bless and where I saw God work and where I even saw God move in my heart, it was difficult for me to let go of either those kinds of environments or those specific programs, because I had seen God work. And there was part of me as a church planner, I didn't want to accidentally create an environment or create a system that worked against the Holy Spirit. So I think there's that part of it as well. As leaders internally, there's that struggle of, okay, have we confused the work of God with a specific method? And when we've seen God use a method, sometimes it's hard to divorce ourselves from that method, regardless of what culture says. But that's a dangerous trap, and that's a dangerous road to go down.
Mm-hmm. You guys have talked about how this principle applies to an overall approach to ministry. Reggie, how does this really apply within the context of a specific ministry?
Well, I think once you begin to practice the principle of narrow the focus, and that is a general understanding that we're going to do less, and you take that concept and apply it to every environment, it changes the way you create an environment. For example, we all grew up in models where they would create some type of a program, but we would go into that program, Sunday school, for example, and there would be five or six things they were trying to make Sunday school do. Well, all five or six of those things, again, could become competing issues within that program. So the main thing that you need that program to do isn't happening at all. What we have done is we've backed away and we've said to our ministry, okay, when you create an environment, one of the most important things you can do is focus. One of the most important things you can do is to write a brief on a creative board and go, okay, this program exists to do this one thing primarily. And once that is defined, everything else in the program begins to be built around that issue. And it keeps that environment pure and clean and driven and focused and powerful.
And it's easy to evaluate success. And this is a little bit like what we talked about when we talked about clarify the win.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many times people will walk into an environment and they will want it to accomplish something we don't intend for it to accomplish. And so consequently, you know, when you're committed to narrow the focus, it enables you to say, you know what, we could do that here and we could accomplish some of that here, but we've chosen not to. This morning when I was exercising, I was outside with a guy I exercise with, and a lady pulled up in her car, and she said, well, I'll just ask the boss. That was the first thing she said, and she attends North Point. I turned around, and she said, I've been wondering, and she talked about this church she went to in California where after church they have a big barbecue, and they have all these big barbecue pits, and everybody goes out and eats together. She said, wouldn't it be great, da-da-da-da-da-da. I said, no, that would be terrible. I said, our goal after church is to get everybody off the campus. We don't want them hanging around. We've got to get another boatload in. And she stopped, and she said, well, I didn't think about that. And in sort of a silly way, you know, here's a lady who's thinking, gee, while everybody's there, why don't we have fellowship? Why don't we have connection? Why don't we have relationship building? We're saying, no, no, no. Sunday morning here is not about that. We have other environments for that.
Exactly.
But there's oftentimes well-meaning people, great ideas, great church experiences somewhere else. They will work hard unintentionally to help us blur the focus, blur the distinction in programming, and cause us to want to, or try to get us to do too much at one time.
It is so important that everyone has gathered around a table as a team and really defined the focus of every environment that exists in your organization. For example, you know, in Inside Out, our student program on Sunday afternoons that primarily is designed around discipleship in the small group context, it's very easy for them to decide what not to do and what to do in that environment, because something comes along and they say, why don't we do this to reach the non-Christian kids? Well, that's not what that environment was designed to do. That environment was designed to bring believers together so that these Christian teenagers could have a support group and basically sit in and have accountability, ministry, and care. By the same token, they do a rush hour program, you know, once a month or so, and they make sure that the communicators, the music, and everything is designed to make seeker students or non-Christian teenagers come with their friends who are Christians and have a great time and be introduced to the church. If the kids' stuff environment, which is for parents and kids, is trying to do the same thing that the upstreet environment is doing, which is basically the small group model for children, then all of a sudden the lines become blurred. What happens when you create focus, very clear focus in each one of the environments, is that you are literally creating a brand. Because now everyone understands exactly what Inside Out is supposed to do, and they show up expecting Inside Out to do what Inside Out does. Parents show up at Kids Stuff with their kids, and they bring their neighbors. You know why? Because they know when they show up at Kids Stuff what they're going to get. And it becomes a brand that's very distinctive in the minds and hearts of the people that attend.
And it's much easier to promote a brand than it is to promote some general idea of church.
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah, we don't talk about invite people to youth group. What's youth group? Well, youth group can be anything from Sunday school to a concert to pizza to, you know, what's a youth group? But instead, within our student ministry, there are three or four brands that are very focused where we've clarified the win, and we work hard not to allow those environments to lose their distinction.
And here's, we've had this discussion several times as a team. We know that changing the image of the church in general in our culture is almost impossible to do. Because we have so many different people who live and walk and breathe, and they've had their experience with church, and it's been 1,000 different experiences, and we can put billboards up, we can send out direct mailings, we can put radio broadcasts, but we're trying to change an image that in their mind we're going to have a difficult time changing because of what they've experienced. But if all of a sudden we create a distinct environment where a teenager shows up to Inside Out, or a parent shows up to Kids Stuff, or, you know, adult shows up, married adult shows up to Married Life program, all of a sudden, those brands and those environments begin to change their perception of what the church is, because we're meeting a specific need in their life, and it's predictable, and for them, it's a place where life change can happen.
And even if they don't know what it is, they know what it's not. I mean, they don't have an idea in mind that it's church. They come in really with an open mind a lot of times.
Right.
Branding is really a marketplace type word. Is that appropriate for church?
Absolutely. Branding is basically defining yourself in the mind of a person. That's all it is. It's defining yourself in the mind of a customer, in the mind of a client, in the mind of a culture, in the mind of a community. That every church has a brand. In other words, when somebody hears the name of your church, something comes to mind. If nothing comes to mind, then you've not clearly branded, but you've basically, because you have no specific brand, you just fall in the category of church, whatever that might be. So branding is very, very important, and narrow the focus is what enables any organization, but specifically a local church, to brand themselves in the minds of their customer, which might be the people who attend, the people who just hear about the church, but it's extraordinarily important. But what we've said, it's not just important for us to have a North Point brand. We want to have multiple brands because we have multiple audiences. And the more narrowly we define an environment, And the better we define what that environment does in the minds of people, the more specific the brand is. And consequently, when people have questions, struggles, tensions, hit a bump, meet somebody of a certain age, hopefully our brand comes to mind. So it's very important, but it's not enough to say, come to our church, because church is not a defined brand. The specific things that happen in a church oftentimes are. One of the things that that we're working toward here and that I'm excited to see happen is in our community, the North Point brand goes beyond simply people who attend here. And what we hear oftentimes, and I'm just thrilled about this, is that even Christians who don't attend this church, who don't even have any interest in attending this church, they will meet somebody in the marketplace, they'll meet somebody in the neighborhood who expresses an interest in going to church. And when they think, bring my unchurched friend or neighbor to church, our church comes to mind because we have branded ourselves in their mind even though they don't attend here. So this is an extraordinarily important idea, but the way you do that is through focus. And the reason people think North Point or Buckhead Church in this community when they think unchurched person is because of the focus of what happens here on Sunday morning. But that can happen at multiple levels in an organization. And one of the best and most helpful conversations a church staff can have is, what do we want people to think when they think about our specific environments?
And it's not only people who don't attend here, it's people who won't attend here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I talk to people all the time who, well, you know, it's not for me, but I've just met this person, and I know that what's for me will not be for them, and they come all the time.
Yeah. And again, that's the principle of focus. Anyone who's creating a brand has to decide who the brand is not for.
Right.
And sometimes, and we've read this.
And they have to be comfortable with that.
They have to be. And we've read this in a number of different books. The demise of some organizations is that they try to increase their customer base at the expense of losing their brand.
When you lose focus, you ultimately lose distinction in the minds of the people that know about your organization. And once you become just another church, then there's really no leverage for reaching the community.
How does applying the principle of narrow the focus impact leadership development?
Well, it makes leadership development and leadership recruitment much easier, because it's one thing to say, we need you to help us in our youth group, as opposed to, we need small group leaders to minister to middle schoolers, or, you know, we need some sound and light, we need some production-oriented people to help us in a specific environment. The more narrow the focus, the easier it is to write a job description. The narrower the focus is of a particular environment, the easier it is to tap people on the shoulder and say, will you come with me to do something very, very specific? So the broader the invitation, the less likely you're going to get who you need. The narrower the invitation, the more likely you're going to get who you need. And the narrower the focus, the easier it is to define what happens in a specific environment.
Well, what is true of an environment is also true of an individual. Our environments increase in their potential to make an impact when we focus them. People tend to improve and create, you know, more impact with their life when their life becomes more focused. And when we create environments and we can push down and help people know specifically what they do and their unique contribution, it enables them to make a difference and to really make a difference and see the difference they make. And for that reason, you know, we tend to create in our organization what we consider to be a breed of specialists instead of generalists. And when people are specialized in their skills and they eat, drink, live, breathe a specific responsibility, you know, it really enhances the organization and we become experts and better at what we're doing.
Now, one of the pushbacks we get on this a lot is, and it's so easy to sort of just diss all this and say, well, you're a big church, big budget, lots of staff, I'm sure this is easy for you. But what I would love for our audience to understand is, we really were thinking this way day one. We were thinking this way when there were a few of us with huge responsibilities, and many of you have heard the story where we drew an organizational chart with over 100 positions, and we put our six names in each box because all of us were wearing lots of hats, doing lots of things, like any group that's planting a church. But from day one, we decided whatever we do, we want it to be so good that this is the best one of those around, which meant we did very few things, but we did them well, and we said no a lot, and we said not yet a lot, and we said maybe later a lot. And we were comfortable with that, because the last thing you want to do is to do 100 things in a mediocre way, because there are other places people can go to get serviced better in any of those types of environments. So in terms of recruiting people, coming back to your question, it made it very easy for us, even in the beginning, to develop specialists instead of generalists. As a staff person, we had to be generalist. But when it came to recruiting people to volunteer in the ministries, even then at the very beginning, we could find specialists because we remained focused and we were content to do just a very few things well.
But even as a generalist on staff, I remember the Monday morning you showed up with a very narrowly focused job description for each one of us.
Yeah. It was one sentence for each one of us. Of course, we had not had a lot of input into that,
no.
So we didn't know what we were going to be doing. But it sure provided focus for us, didn't it?
It did. We knew right away in 8 words or less.
But you know, there's power in that, though. I mean, there really is power in knowing at the end of the day, at the end of the week, at the end of the month, at the end of the year, this is the one thing I'm responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to see that and understand that and for everyone else to see it and understand it just provides for your life direction.
I tell pastors all the time, one of the best things you can do is what we're talking about right now, is to create the one sentence job description. You know, if all else fails, Reggie, here's what I'm looking
right.
for. If all else fails, Julie, you know, create an unforgettable experience on Sunday morning. I want it to be an unforgettable experience. I don't, you know, whatever else, that's what you have to do. So, again, that was just another application of what it means to narrow the focus. Here's a one-sentence job description. And you know what? It took me forever to come up with those six sentences. I mean, they're so simple when you read them. It took days off and on of thinking through, okay, but what's the one thing? What's the one thing? What's the one thing? But there's power in that when you finally arrive at it. There's another application, the whole narrow the focus principle that applies to everybody in ministry. If you're like me, you get lots of questions, or maybe you have questions about scheduling the ministry and scheduling personally. And people will say, Andy, how do you stay in control of your schedule? How is it that you're not out every night of the week, big church, lots of staff, lots of demands? And the answer to that question has nothing to do with scheduling. It has to do with his principle.
Right.
It's narrow the focus. Narrow the focus is the answer to the tension of scheduling, whether it's scheduling personally with my family or even a ministry, because narrow the focus weeds out complexity, and complexity is what eats up our time. So the issue really isn't, you know, how do you get control of your schedule? The question is, how can you narrow your focus? Because a narrow focus results in a less complex schedule. Again, whether that's scheduling ministries in the church, family, or just what you do with your own time.
And you have to be aggressive about that.
Right, because everything drifts. Everything drifts towards complexity. It's just a law. Everything drifts towards complexity. So if we're not intentional about narrowing the focus, things just get more complex.
As we wrap up this discussion, guys, what do you see as the primary advantages for applying this principle?
Well, the three or four things. You know, I think at the end of the day, as we think through the idea of focus, you can be sure that the more you focus each environment, the greater the relevance. In other words, when you think about your audience, if you've got, you know, seven ninth grade boys sitting around in a circle with an adult male leader, the issue is going to be relevant. I mean, they're going to talk about stuff they can't talk about if all of a sudden you take those ninth grade boys, you put them in a room with ninth grade girls, or better yet, you put these ninth grade boys into a room with all of these high schoolers, or better yet, you put all of these high schoolers into a room with married adults. I mean, the broader you make, you know, the environment, the less relevant you're going to be. And the more specific or narrow the focus environment, the more relevant it'll be.
I think another one, too, is that the more you focus an environment, the better connection you're going to have. And again, it goes back to sort of what Reggie just said. There's a more specific personal connection when I'm connecting around a specific issue, a specific age group, a specific topic. So narrowing the focus just allows for better connection.
And the more you focus each environment, the higher the quality. You can only do so much. You have limited resources. You have limited time. You have limited staff. And you know, the less you do, the better you're going to be at doing what you do. And again, I think we're an example of that. And I would encourage, you know, churches and ministers and leaders to just decide to take something off the table so something else can just not simply survive but thrive.
I think lastly, a narrowed focus in any arena results in greater impact, whether it's greater impact personally, greater impact in ministry, greater impact in family. A narrower focus results in greater impact. And ultimately, that's what we're about. That's what we want to do. That's what everybody listening to this has committed their life to. We want to make as much impact with our life as possible, and focus allows us to do that.
Andy and Reggie, I want to thank you guys for joining me today, and I want to thank those of you listening as well. If you'd like more information on the 7 Practices of Effective Ministry, they're all detailed in a book from Multnomah Press, available at this website. For other resources from North Point Ministries, please go to northpoint.org.